hadn't. "Whom I," continued the mannequin, "some 3 months hence, stabbed in my angry mood at Tewkesbury." "Listen, guys, I'd love to help you, but I can't. I've spent 12 years trying to forget. Speak to some other vet. There are thousands of us."
"Not like you, Miss Next. You survived the charge. You went back to get your fallen comrades out, one of the 51. It's your duty to speak on behalf of those that didn't make it."
"Bullshit. My duty is to myself. I survived the charge and have lived with it every single day since. Every night I ask myself, why me? Why did I live and the others, my brother even, die? There is no answer to that question, and that's only just where the pain starts. I can't help you."
"You don't have to speak," said the girl persistently. "But better for one old wound to open than 1,000 new ones, eh?"
"Don't teach me morality, you little shit," I said, my voice rising. It had the desired effect. She handed me a leaflet, took her boyfriend by the arm, and departed. I closed my eyes. My heart was beating like the crump, crump, crump of the Russian field artillery. I didn't hear the squad car pull up behind me. "Officer Next?" asked a cheery voice. I turned and nodded gratefully, picked up my case, and walked over. The officer in the car smiled at me. He had long dreadlocked hair and a pair of overly large dark glasses. His uniform was open at the collar, in an uncharacteristically casual way for a Spec Ops officer, and he wore a goodly amount of jewellery, also strictly against Spec Ops guidelines.
"Welcome to Swindon, officer, the town where anything can happen and probably will."
He smiled broadly and jerked a thumb towards the rear of the car.
"Boots open."
The boot contained a lot of iron stakes, several mallets, a large crucifix and a pick and shovel. There was also a musty smell, the smell of mould and the long dead. I hurriedly threw in my bag and slammed the boot lid down. I walked round to the passenger door and got in.
"Shit!"
I cried out, suddenly noticing that in the back, pacing the rear seats behind a strong mesh screen, was a large Siberian wolf. The officer laughed loudly.
"Take no notice of the pup, ma'am. Officer Next, I'd like you to meet Mr. Meikle. Mr. Meikle, this is Officer Next."
He was talking about the wolf. I stared at the wolf, which stared back at me with an intensity that I found disconcerting. The officer laughed like a drain and pulled away with a lurch and a squeal of tyres. I had forgotten just how weird Swindon could be. As we drove off, the Will Speak machine came to an end, reciting the last part of its soliloquy to itself. "Shine out, fair sun, till I have bought a glass, that I might see my shadow as I pass." There was a clicking and whirring, and then the mannequin stopped abruptly, lifeless again until the next coin.
"Beautiful day," I commented once we were underway. "Every day's a beautiful day, Miss Next. The name's Stoker."
He pulled out onto the Stratton bypass.
"Spec Ops 17. Vampire and werewolf disposal operations. Suckers and biters, they call us. My friends call me Spike."
"You," he added with a broad grin,
"can call me Spike."
By way of explanation, he tapped a mallet and stake that were clipped to the mesh partition.
"What they call you, Miss Next?"
"Thursday."
"Pleased to meet you, Thursday."
He proffered a huge hand that I shook gratefully. I liked him immediately. He leaned against the door pillar to get the best out of the cooling breeze and tapped a beat out on the steering wheel. A recent scratch on his neck oozed a small amount of blood.
"You're bleeding,"
I observed. Spike wiped it away with his hand.
"It's nothing. He gave me a bit of a struggle."
I looked in the back seat again. The wolf was sitting down, scratching its ear with a hind leg.
"But I'm immunised against lycanthropy. Mr. Meikle just won't take his medication. Will you, Mr. Meikle?"
The wolf pricked up its ears as the last vestige of the human within him remembered his name. He started to pant in the heat. Spike went on.
"His neighbours called. All the cats in the neighbourhood had gone missing. I found him rummaging in the bins behind Smiley Burger. He'll be in for treatment, morph back, and be on the streets again by Friday. He has rights, they tell me. What's your posting?"
"I'm, joining Spec Ops 27.
Spike laughed loudly again. Literatech. Always nice to meet someone as underfunded as I am. Some good faces in that office. Your chief is Victor Analogy. Don't be fooled by the grey hairs. He's as sharp as a knife. The others are all A1 ops. Bit shiny-arsed and a mite too smart for me, but there you go. Where am I taking you?
The Finnis Hotel.
First time in Swindon?
Sadly, no, I replied. It's my hometown. I was in the regular force here until 75. You?
Welsh border guard for 10 years. I got into some darkness at Oswestry in 79 and discovered I had a talent for this kind of shit. I trannied it from Oxford when the two depots merged. You're looking at the only staker south of Leeds. I run my own office, but it's mighty lonesome. If you know anyone handy with a mallet?
I'm afraid I don't, I replied, wondering why anyone would consciously wish to fight the supreme powers of darkness for a basic spec op salary. But if I come across anyone, I'll let you know. What happened to Chesney? He ran the department when I was here last. A cloud crossed Spike's usually bright features, and he sighed deeply.
He was a good friend, but he fell into shadows. Became a servant of the Dark One. I had to hunt him down myself. The Spike and decap was the easy part. The tricky bit was having to tell his wife. She wasn't exactly overjoyed.
I guess I'd be a bit pissed off too.
Anyway, continued Spike, cheering up almost immediately, you don't have to tell me shit, but what is a good-looking spec ops doing joining the Swindon Literatex?
I had a spot of bother in London.
Ah,
replied Spike knowingly. I'm also looking for someone.
Who?
I looked over at him and made an instant judgment call. If I could trust anyone, I could trust Spike.
Hades. Acheron? Flatline, sister. Man's toast. Crashed and burned at J12 on a 4.
So we're led to believe. If you hear anything?
No problem, Thursday.
And we can keep this between ourselves?
He smiled. After staking, secrets is what I do best.
Hang on. I had caught sight of a brightly coloured sports car in a second-hand car lot on the other side of the road. Spike slowed down.
What's up?
I need a car. Can you drop me over there? Spike executed an illegal U-turn, causing the following car to brake violently and slew across the road. The driver started to hurl abuse until he saw that it was a spec ops black and white, then wisely kept quiet and drove on. I retrieved my bag.
Thanks for the lift. I'll see you about. Not if I see you first, said Spike. I'll see what I can dig up on your missing friend.
I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Goodbye.
So long. Cheerio, said a timid-sounding voice from the back. We both turned and looked into the rear of the car. Mr. Meikle had changed back. A thin, rather pathetic-looking man was sitting in the back seat, completely naked and very muddy. His hands were clasped modestly over his genitals.
Mr. Meikle, welcome back, said Spike, grinning broadly as he added in a scolding tone, "You didn't take your tablets, did you?"
Mr. Meikle shook his head miserably. I thanked Spike again. As he drove off, I could see Mr. Meikle waving to me a bit stupidly through the rear window. Spike did another U-turn, causing a second car to brake hard, and was gone. I stared at the sports car on the front row of the lot under a banner marked Bargain. There could be no mistake. The car was definitely the one that had appeared before me in my hospital room. And I had been driving it. It was me who had told me to come to Swindon. It was me who had told me that Acheron wasn't dead. If I hadn't come to Swindon, then I wouldn't have seen the car and wouldn't have been able to buy it. It didn't make a great deal of sense, but what little I did know was that I had to have it.
"Can I help you, madam?"
asked an oily salesman who had appeared almost from nowhere, rubbing his hands nervously and sweating profusely in the heat.
"This car, how long have you had it?"
"The 356 Speedster, about 6 months."
"Has it ever been up to London in that time?"
"London?" repeated the salesman, slightly puzzled.
"Not at all. Why?"
"No reason. I'll take it."
The salesman looked slightly shocked.
Are you sure? Wouldn't you like something a little more practical? I have a good selection of Buicks which have just come in. Ex-Goliath, but with low mileage, you know.
This one, I said firmly. The salesman smiled uneasily. The car was obviously at a giveaway price, and they didn't stand to make a bean on it. He muttered something feeble and hurried off to get the keys. I sat inside. The interior was Spartan in the extreme. I had never thought myself very interested in cars, but this one was different. It was outrageously conspicuous, with curious paintwork in red, blue and green, but I liked it immediately. The salesman returned with the keys, and it started on the second turn. He did the necessary paperwork, and half an hour later I drove out of the lot into the road. The car accelerated rapidly with a rasping note from the tailpipe. Within a couple of hundred yards, the two of us were inseparable. Chapter 9. The Next Family. I was born on a Thursday, hence the name. My brother was born on a Monday, and they called him Anton. Go figure. My mother was called Wednesday, but was born on a Sunday. I don't know why. And my father had no name at all. His identity and existence had been scrubbed by the Chronoguard after he went rogue. To all intents and purposes, he didn't exist at all. It didn't matter. He was always Dad to me. Thursday next, a life in Specops. I took my new car for a drive in the countryside with the top down. The rushing air was a cool respite from the summer heat. The familiar landscape had not changed much. It was still as beautiful as I remembered. Swindon, on the other hand, had changed a great deal. The town had spread outwards and up. Light industry went outwards, financial glassy towers in the centre went up. The residential area had expanded accordingly. The countryside was just that much farther from the centre of town. It was evening when I pulled up in front of a plain, semi-detached house in a street that contained 40 or 50 just like it. I flipped up the hood and locked the car. This was where I had grown up. My bedroom was the window above the front door. The house had aged. The painted window frames had faded, and the pebble-dash facing seemed to be coming away from the wall in several areas. I pushed open the front gate with some difficulty, as there was a good deal of resistance behind it, and then closed it again with a similar amount of heaving and sweating, a task made more difficult by the assortment of dodos who had gathered eagerly around to see who it was, and then plucked excitedly when they realised it was someone vaguely familiar. "Hello, Mordecai," I said to the oldest, who dipped and bobbed in greeting. They all wanted to be made a fuss of after that, so I stayed a while and tickled them under their chins as they searched my pockets inquisitively for any sign of marshmallows, something that dodos find particularly irresistible. My mother opened the door to see what the fuss was about, and ran up the path to meet me. The dodos wisely scattered, as my mother can be dangerous at anything more than a fast walk. She gave me a long hug. I returned it gratefully. "Thursday," she said, her eyes glistening. "Why didn't you tell us you were coming?" "It was a surprise, Mum. I've got a posting in town." She had visited me in hospital several times, and bored me in a delightfully distracting manner with all the minutiae of Margot Fischler's hysterectomy and the Women's Federation gossip. "How's the arm?" "It can be a bit stiff sometimes, and when I sleep on it, it goes completely numb. Garden's looking nice. Can I come in?" My mother apologised and ushered me through the door, taking my jacket and hanging it up in the cloakroom. She looked awkwardly at the automatic in my shoulder holster, so I stuffed it in my case. The house, I soon noticed, was exactly the same. The same mess, the same furniture, the same smell. I paused to look around, to take it all in and bathe in the security of fond memories. The last time I had been truly happy was in Swindon, and this house had been the hub of my life for 20 years. A creeping doubt entered my mind about the wisdom of leaving the town in the first place. We walked through to the lounge, still poorly decorated in browns and greens, and looking like a museum of Draylon. The photo of my passing out parade at the police training college was on the mantelpiece.
along with another of Anton and myself in military fatigues, smiling under the harsh sun of the Crimean summer. Sitting on the sofa were an aged couple who were busy watching TV.